It's Wednesday and time for a weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today is Roger Whittle, managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. And Roger, thanks for joining the program.
Thank you, Carl.
Also with us on the line is Jonathan Ellis, reporter and columnist for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And Jonathan, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Carl.
Well, the trial of former South Dakota U.S. Senator, U.S. Senate candidate Annette Bosworth is set to resume today with closing arguments. Bosworth is accused of election law violations. And Roger, can you refresh us on what those violations are?
Yeah, she, according to state law, the candidate has to actually witness signatures being collected and sign an affidavit saying that they did indeed see the people sign their petitions. As a candidate, Bosworth signed the thing that said she had witnessed all of them, but was actually out of the country a lot of the time when these signatures were being collected.
And Jonathan, anything interesting from the trial last week?
Well, I mean, it's pretty cut and dry, really. I mean, she faces, I think, 6 counts of submitting false documents, and then 6 counts of perjury. And I mean, she, you know, her defense is, yeah, it happened, but I was only acting on the advice of my lawyer. You know, it's been an interesting, very public dispute between, you know, Annette Bosworth and her former lawyer, Joel Ahrens, who, you know, represented her for a time. You know, even going back when the state was trying to take her medical license. So, yeah, it's been a very public dispute between the two of them and frankly, some of her other campaign people. I think during the trial, one of her former campaign workers, Ethan Crisp, testified that she was deceitful. And so it's been very interesting. I mean, one of the swirling around all of this is sort of the accusation that the Bosworth people owe a lot of people money, and sort of unrelated to what she's on trial for, but there have been those accusations that, you know, that people were swindled in raffles and other things that were going on.
KLO Television has been broadcasting the trial from the Hughes County Courthouse via the Internet. I'm wondering, Roger, if you think it's important that these proceedings be available for the public to watch?
Well, of course, I think all such proceedings should be available to the public, but in this case, I think they're just after some ratings because Annette Bosworth was kind of a colorful character when she was running for the Senate, and I'm sure they're hoping to get a lot of people watching.
Is this, Roger, to some extent, a continuation of what was, I guess we can call it, a rather colorful campaign last spring?
Well, I don't know if she'd like it to continue this way because she's up on felony charges, but I think that's the public, even though they didn't vote for her, was kind of taken with her during the campaign. And I think that a lot of people, she's still a very polarizing person. People either love her or they dislike her a lot. So, yeah, I think the interest this trial is generating is a reflection of that.
South of the border in Nebraska, Governor Pete Ricketts vetoed a bill yesterday that would abolish the death penalty there. A vote to override the veto, last I heard, is scheduled for this afternoon. Looking in South Dakota, Jonathan, is there much of a chance for a similar bill in South Dakota?
Short answer is no. Well, there's something typically in the legislative session. I mean, there's a bill introduced along those lines. And they're usually. I mean, I think maybe a few years ago, one got a little further down the line. But there was a Senate bill that was defeated in short order. There was another bill that had Representative Steve Hickey as a prime sponsor that would have allowed. If somebody was a victim of a murder or something, and they had actually personally, they or their family members had did not like the death penalty, I mean that could be introduced at a hearing so that somebody wouldn't be sentenced to death. That was disposed of pretty quickly in the process. So, I think the governor has indicated his support for the death penalty in what I think they've termed as very rare but serious situations. So I don't see that changing here. I mean, the way it would, I mean, the only way that I think the death penalty changes in here and some in other parts of the country is if they you start to find that there were some innocent people put to death, and if you could actually quantify the fact that perhaps these death penalty cases are substantially more money than just simply locking somebody away. So I don't know that I see a big sea change here in South Dakota on that issue yet.
Roger Whittle, do you see what's happening in Nebraska having any impact at all in South Dakota?
Well, I kind of agree with Jonathan on this. In fact, I lived in Nebraska for 13 years before I moved back home to South Dakota, and the two states are incredibly similar in their political landscape, both very conservative. I'm actually surprised that the bill passed the Nebraska legislature this year. There's a senator down there, Ernie Chambers, who's been his pet project. He's a longtime politician down there, and for 30 years he's been trying to get the death penalty abolished. And just kept getting a little bit closer every year, and I think maybe finally people just got tired of him introducing that bill, so they passed it. But last I heard, it's very close. The override vote could be close. They had three extra votes, and one of them has already flipped back to the governor's side, and a couple are wavering. So it'll be interesting to see what happens up there. But I don't really see it happening here unless we get somebody like Senator Chambers to make it a issue that they would keep pounding away at until people start listening.
Well, moving back to South Dakota, supporters of medical marijuana are planning on gathering signatures to put an initiative on the 2016 ballot. And Jonathan, do you think it'll make it on the ballot? Was this something that was on the ballot a few years ago? I wasn't in the state at the time. I'm thinking that there was.
Yeah, it's had an interesting little history. In 2006, there was a medical marijuana bill that actually got 48% of the vote and came very close. And then what's interesting is if you fast forward then 4 years to the 2010 election, there was another medical marijuana initiated measure, and that only received about 36% of the vote. So it went within 4 years, support for medical marijuana receded very rapidly, and that's sort of, you know, counter compared to how it's been going nationally. Nationally, you've seen not only support for medical marijuana, but you're seeing increased support for simply, you know, measures that decriminalize it or legalize it to some extent, depending on where you are. So it would be interesting. I mean, I don't think that they'll have any trouble getting it on the ballot necessarily. They've proven they can do that. There's enough support for it. But it would be interesting to see in light of what's happened in Colorado and Washington and some other places, what the reaction to that is here.
Roger Whittle, from your perspective, how much support do you think a medical marijuana initiative would get in South Dakota in 2016?
I was looking at those same numbers, too. Went from 48% to, actually went backwards in a time where most states are going the other direction. So, your guess is as good as mine on this. It'll be interesting to see what happens this time. I know with Colorado legalizing marijuana recently, I know the state of Nebraska is trying to sue them to overturn that law in Colorado because they say a lot of people are bringing marijuana that's legal in Colorado into Nebraska. And I also heard today that they're blaming an increase in meth possession in South Dakota on the fact that marijuana has been legalized in places, which I don't really understand. But I think we're seeing a lot of backlash on marijuana around here, and I really would be surprised if it came close to passing.
Meanwhile, marijuana legalization advocate Bob Newland is proposing two ballot initiatives that would ban tobacco and alcohol in the state. Jonathan, is he trying to make a point with that?
Yeah, he definitely is. I mean, going back to the backlash, if there's a backlash on marijuana and people blaming more meth use on marijuana, I mean, it's just ludicrous. And, I think that Bob Newland's point is that, you have these two deadly drugs, tobacco and alcohol, that are legal, and here's marijuana where it's a fairly benign drug, okay, all things considered. And the people who want to say that otherwise are simply spouting government propaganda that's been used for decades to make this drug illegal. So, Bob Newlin is definitely trying to make a point, although one of his compatriots in this, Andrew Ziegler, is actually very serious about trying to get a tobacco ban on the ballot. So we'll see how he, if he can get others' support on that to collect enough signatures.
Senator Mike Rounds has proposed creating a joint bipartisan congressional committee to review new rules by federal agencies and eliminate those deemed overly burdensome. Rounds' Regulation Sensibility Through Oversight Restoration Committee would review all rules with an economic impact of $50 million or more. Roger Whittle, what do you think will happen with Senator Rounds' idea? What would it take for that to be implemented?
Well, he admits himself that getting bipartisan agreement on anything in Washington these days is next to impossible. He has a few people lined up behind this measure, including, I believe, a Democratic senator from West Virginia. So he's going to push it forward, but he has himself admitted it's going to be really difficult to do. And even then, if he does get this in place, it's actually a difficult process to review all the rules that come out. So he definitely has his work cut out for him.
Is this Roger among the things that he campaigned on?
He did. It's a common conservative issue with over burdensome government regulation. I think he throws around the figure $1.8 trillion, I believe, is what government regulation costs businesses. So it's something that the Republicans have been talking about for a long time.
Jonathan Ellis, does it seem like Senator Rounds' proposal is a good idea, a good response to a problem that many people see in government?
Well, there's been a lot of, again, this is something that's been building over decades, but a lot of angst, I think, in certain political quarters about, you know, Congress has certainly sort of delegated a lot of its authority to federal agencies that they've created, and basically those federal agencies were created because, you know, government, things have gotten more complex. I mean, when you have air pollution standards, you have water, all these different standards, and, you know, back, you know, 100 years ago, obviously we didn't have those kinds of issues, and so, you know, government's gotten more complex, and there's certainly some angst among conservatives that, you know, Congress is just not providing enough oversight over these federal agencies. On the other hand, you know, there's potentially a reason for that, and that, you know, a lot of Congress people don't necessarily have the scientific backgrounds or the expertise in this, and you know, the rulemaking process is sort of laborious and gets bogged down, and so, you know, there are questions about whether Congress has the ability or to oversee these kinds of highly technical rules.
Senator Rounds has been in office for about 5 months now. Roger Whittle, any thoughts on his first few months in office?
Well, I believe he's going to introduce this proposal in his first speech on the Senate floor. So he's been kind of quiet so far, but I think that's he's in a big crowd of conservative Republicans, but it'll be interesting to see how his first big major push goes.
Jonathan, any thoughts on Senator Rounds' first few months in office?
I think, you know, he seems like he's sort of getting the lay of the land there, but he's, you know, been hitting on, I think, the sort of topics that we would expect him to hit. Like, certainly today there was he's been talking about the EPA. Speaking of rules, they're implementing some new rules on the waters of the U.S. and so he's been very critical of that. So some of the issues that he's been dealing with are ones you would expect a conservative Republican or Republican to talk about. And then of course there are some more parochial issues that he's talked about. Certainly. I think he introduced some legislation to protect the B-1 bomber at Ellsworth. Those are some parochial things to try to, you know, shore up, you know, Ellsworth Air Force Base, and then some other issues that are important to South Dakota voters as well.
Members of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission ruled yesterday that a tribal environmental group can't present testimony on climate change during a state permit hearing for TransCanada's proposed Keystone XL pipeline. Roger, I don't know how closely you've been watching this, but do you know why the PUC made this ruling?
Well, apparently since the original permit was issued 4 years ago, so much time has passed that they have to have this hearing to re-make sure the permit still is valid. And since, apparently from what I've read, since climate change wasn't a part of the original permitting process, the PUC said it will not be part of the process now. I don't know if that makes perfect sense, but that's what I understand it to be.
Jonathan Ellis, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm relying on by basically Bob Mercer, who wrote an account of that PUC meeting, and God bless Bob for being there. but yeah, it seemed to be from that account, it seemed to be a procedural deal where you had Commissioner Gary Hansen say, look, we didn't take into account this climate change issue when we issued the original permit back in 2010. Back then, we focused on South Dakota issues. We didn't focus on what the pipeline meant to other states or to Canada or anything else. We focused on what it would mean here in South Dakota. So I think from their position is, in redoing this, we need to just focus on, the consistency of what we had the first time around. Obviously, there are a lot of people on the other side of this issue who would prefer to have it opened up and to look at it more global perspective on what this pipeline would mean.
Is this a setback for pipeline opponents, Jonathan?
Well, I think any time they don't have an opportunity to present evidence that they wanted to present, yeah, it's a setback. I still don't think, though, that at the end of the day, even if they had been allowed to have their witnesses, I don't see it changing anything. But yeah, certainly it's a setback. It means that when they had witnesses that would have otherwise testified, that Bob Mercer, who would have been up there covering it, would have written some stories about it and would have gotten out, and their views would have gotten out. But at the end of the day, do I think it changes how all this plays out? No, I don't.
Well, Roger Whittle, finally, it's been a few weeks since President Obama was in Watertown. Has the city recovered from that visit, or are there still sort of reverberations of the big visit from the president?
Well, I don't know if there's reverberations. I'd say we're still basking in the post-presidential glow here. Everything went so smoothly that I think there's a lot of people in the town patting themselves on the back that they pulled off this major event so well. And I think that's the general consensus from people in town, that everything went just perfectly. There were no problems. Everybody was respectful. It was a wonderful event that the city will certainly remember for a long, long time. I don't think they're going to forget about it anytime soon.
Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. And Roger, thanks so much for taking the time to join the program.
Thank you.
And Jonathan, thanks for your time as well.
Thanks a lot, Carl.